My name is Sally Slaymaker. I'm a volunteer of the Junior League of Tulsa, Incorporated. I'm conducting this interview this 19th day of December, 1979, with T. Austin Gavin, exclusively for the Junior League of Tulsa Historic Preservation Project. Now let it run for just a... That's already taken care of.
I just got right off. Well, this is Slaymaker. I have before me what you have heretofore presented under the heading of Judicial Outline. And there are certain questions there that I may be able to answer satisfactorily for your purpose, and if so, I'll be happy to do so. The first question is, when and why did you come to Tulsa? Well, I came to Tulsa in 1913 with my parents. And I came here because I was a minor living with my parents, and they had moved here from Independence, Kansas, and of course I came along as part of the package. You then asked me certain questions about the lawyers. For example, the first one, what types of education did lawyers have? What about judges? Well, not too unlike what it is today. There may be more specialization in education, in legal education, and it's on the increase. I think there will be more and more all the time. In fact, I believe it's now recognized as proper, although I'm not too sure about this, to indicate in your any literature you have or telephone books and the like that you have a particular specialty. The judges, I think, were at least as good, perhaps better than we have now, generally speaking, because they were more mature. There were very few judges that were as young as many of our judges today. That doesn't mean, of course, to be critical of youth. Maybe sometimes it's better, I don't know. I'm just commenting on it because that is a fact.
Can you go into your specific education?
Well, I am the possessor of two degrees, Bachelor of Arts and LLB. The first from St. Mary's College, which is no longer in existence, Jesuit institution, of which I'm very proud. I was educated by the Jesuits, which is more or less top so far as the Catholic Church is concerned. And the Georgetown, where I had procured my law degree. I might mention in passing, although I'm not particularly proud of it, the present foreign minister, I believe he's called, of Iran, of whom we've been hearing much on the television, is a Georgetown graduate of the School of Foreign Service, which was the first School of Foreign Service, I believe, that ever was instituted, the one that was instituted at Georgetown in Washington sometime about 1920. And he is a graduate of that. He was graduated from that school. You touch upon here, judges, how they're elected. They're elected much as they are today, generally speaking. Justices of the peace were elected popularly, and some appointments were made.
Do you remember any justices of the peace that were...
I remember one.
Characters?
Oh, yes. I remember one very well. I almost thought I was going to be able to tell his name, but that might be not just known enough to be there. But he was fantastically ignorant. He knew so little that when preliminaries, which were formally conducted, preliminary hearings, anticipatorily to criminal trials, they were held by the justice of the peace. Of course, they had to be arraigned as they are today.
Yeah.
And he would call out, "Now let the prisoners, let the defendants be arranged."
Oh dear.
He was, I wish I could remember his name, although as I say, I don't think it would be well. It was a very crude system, and one of the great things, of course, that happened is that we finally got rid of the justice of the peace. You are inquiring about what was it like to be a lawyer in the early days. I have to repeat more or less the same thing. We're about the same as it is today. Lawyers are regarded, I think, fairly highly, not too highly, really. In fact, I think the polls do not indicate that they are as high as I think they are. In other words, my experience with lawyers has been eminently satisfactory. I have encountered practically no lawyer in my whole professional practice that I thought would resort to any improprieties. They've always maintained, as far as I am concerned, at least, and I've dealt with all kinds of lawyers. They have conducted themselves professionally, properly, with almost without exception, as far as my experience is concerned.
Do you think that there are a lot more cases brought before the courts today, though, than there used to be?
Oh, yes. Oh, my.
I mean, in many ways,
yes.
It's...
See, we have, of course, after all, you must remember that the period I'm talking about, Tulsa, has grown from about 72,000 to the last census, I think, was about 322,000. Of course, obviously, there are more crime, there are more lawyers, and there are more judges. And I don't even know how many judges we have now, and some of them I don't even know. And many of them have been at the bar a very short length of time. But they do a fairly good job, I think. You ask about professional organizations. Were there for lawyers? Well, as long as I have been at the bar, at least, we've always had organizations such as County Bar Association in most of the state, in most of the counties, State Bar, and of course there's the American Bar, and all of these have been organized well and have progressed considerably. I don't know that there's anything else I could say about it. Is that what you mean about the organizations? Were there?
Yes, if there, do you remember any possibly special, you say there's a Tulsa County.
Tulsa County Bar Association, Oklahoma Bar. An American bar.
Did it used to be that you could go to a meeting and know everybody in the room?
Oh, yes. And now I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was true in America. And of course, I've always been active in the bar and been president of the Tulsa County Bar and the State Bar. And I've been active in the American Bar Association. And I was president, and this is another organization which I neglected to mention, and of which I'm very proud, and that's the Oklahoma Bar Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
During my regime as president of the Flamoir Foundation, the bar building was constructed in Oklahoma City.
Oh.
Completed and paid for at the time of completion. Very outstanding building, very well equipped, library, conference room, so on. Located out right close to the Capitol.
Very nice.
So those are some, there were county attorneys in those days, and I don't know, that's the next question we have here. They were called county attorneys, and they're called district attorneys now. At that time, until just a relatively short time ago, only United States district attorneys were known as district attorneys, or DA. Oh. Now that's true in county as well as federal. I don't know exactly what you mean about how the DA or county attorney in this case may have been, how they helped or hindered the lawyer. The question doesn't lend itself, I don't think, to any particular kind of answer. What did you have in your mind in that regard?
Well, actually, we would like to get into as many personalities as we can. If there was a district attorney or county attorney that maybe tried to overstep the lawyers or the sheriff or police department as it may be, or just
no,
we'd like to get into as many personalities as we can.
I don't think that's the kind of problem or situation or condition or whatever you want to call it arose.
Okay.
That there would be occasion, in other words, for them helping or hindering the lawyers. They did their duty, which was prosecution. And so far as the criminal end was concerned, at least, that's mostly what it is in those offices. They conducted their prosecution in accordance with their methods. And the lawyers who represented the defendants, whether civilly or criminally, did what they thought was proper. The question of working together wasn't really of any particular importance.
Do you remember any that were very outstanding?
Well, there have been several, some one or two before my time, and one or two since. I suppose probably the best known of the county attorneys, so to say, back quite some long distance, was Pat Malloy, who was counsel for the defendant in a very famous case. I believe it was called, I'm not sure, doesn't make any difference, but it was a murder case. I don't remember that much about it. It was before I came to the bar, as I recall it, at the time. Nowadays, I date everything by Chappaquiddick because I didn't think it was 10 years ago since Chappaquiddick occurred.
And it has been.
It has been. So I tell everybody now, I tested out my Chappaquiddick. This is one way of doing it, I guess. He was a colorful county attorney, very eloquent, able, eloquent. County attorney, that was before district attorney, was Dixie Gilmer, who afterward ran for one or two other offices and was, in due course, elected to Congress. Now, both of those men are now deceased. But he was a colorful sort of character. This person whose name appeared frequently in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than that, just offhand, I don't think of any particular one. Howard Edmondson, of course, who became governor, was county attorney. And was quite popular during his regime, as a result of which he was elected governor.
Right.
One thing I say about Howard, and I've put this in there, some people won't like this, if it hadn't been for Howard Edmondson, Oklahoma would never have gone west. See, we're still dry, you know, as far as liquor by the
right.
One of two right. states. The other one's the state of ill repute. I've forgotten what one of the illiterate southern state. But, and there will always be. I don't think we'll ever have liquor by the drink.
Even by county?
No,
I
prefer that.
I would too.
I think if you're in dry, that's perfectly all right with me. The difficulty I find is the dry is so much and wet to have a drink. I don't care whether you remain dry forever. If you're dry, that's fine. That's your business. I'm wet.
Right.
It's my business.
That's right.
So, but I like your county option. Mm-hmm. It's
fairer.
Controversial.
Fairer.
But I think it would be a good thing. But in any event, it was he, under the assistance of some of his friends, Oklahoma to repeal, and that was a very wonderful thing because it was an hypocrisy. You know?
Yes.
It was people who always vote dry as long as they can stagger to the polls. that's about the truth. Matter of fact, bootlegging, as far as convenience is concerned, so far is preferable to the kind of to legal administration, but one doesn't like that if he believes in the law.
Right.
Oh, let's see. What was the lawyer-layman relationship like? And you said, 1, 2, 3, who was the sheriff? Who was the sheriff in the early days? Did he have deputies? Did the sheriff have control? Or when was the police department established? Can you explain the difference in the two as to what each is authorized to handle? Only generally, I can say that there were several outstanding sheriffs, and they were in the county, this difference might be noted, whereas the police were, and that's the same today, governed the city.
Okay.
Who was the sheriff? The sheriff, well, there were of course a great many. Did he have deputies? Yes, he had deputies, as many as apparently were needed or thought to be needed. There was one. Well, there were several outstanding sheriffs. One had the reputation of Charlie Price, never having, while he was in office, worn a gun, which was very unusual, I believe.
Oh, interesting. Now, did you say he was the sheriff?
Yes, okay. Charles Price. He was rather well known. Then there was another one, very well known, Garland Mars, a more recent vintage. I don't know how close his last year was. His wife is still living. I was out at a dinner party not long ago. She was one of the guests. We never had, in my recollection, at least, any particularly what we might call colorful sheriffs or characters. Others might recall someone. They might test the criteria as to what is colorful and so on. They might disagree with that, readily concede that. But as far as I can recall, not anything particularly. They were always have had, as best I can recollect it, men of integrity in the sheriff's office. Not exactly that much may be said about the police department. There have been some, I don't really recall scandals, but I don't want to say it because I don't recall any that were. But there were
sheriff's office. Come in for a little prayer.
I believe you were talking about Garland Mars.
Yeah. Garland was a sheriff for a number of terms, and he was a very highly respected man and a very good officer. Well known. I don't know of any particular law cases that I would want to discuss. I have been in some of them, rather interesting, but details that are sort of gone, you know, you don't like to get into.
Well, what, were these criminal cases that were interesting?
No, I've never been in any but one criminal case in my whole practice. No, I was thinking in terms of persons. One of the best known institutions in Tulsa for many years, you may be familiar with it directly or indirectly, was Bishop's Restaurant.
Yes.
It was an institution which, when closed, it took something away from Tulsa.
Definitely.
Marvelous restaurant.
Definitely.
They had everything except parking. I think that's what did them in.
Mm-hmm.
But they had excellent food, good prices, lovely health. They knew everybody in town there. My name Jack was on there, named Jack Hill. Everybody in town knew it. And I represented Bishop's Restaurant, Mr. Bishop, personally, for a number of years. And one of the very interesting cases, I had two rather interesting cases for him, or the restaurant, was whether or not the, that which was left on the plate in the restaurant by people who were guests there, belonged to the owner of the restaurant or belonged to somebody else, the person who was eating there. And that became important for him because he fed his hogs.
Oh.
He used to use this, and he was questioned. He prevailed in the case. So that was interesting. Another one was for him. He lived at that time a very lovely home on 21st and Lewis, right out where Monte Cassino is, almost directly across from Monte Cassino, where the Texaco's
right.
Station.
Uh-huh. Yorktown.
Home. No, that would be Lewis.
Oh.
Yes, right on the corner of Lewis.
Oh, okay.
And 21st on the...
there are buildings there
the
now.
South, mm-hmm. East corner.
Yes.
And he had his home there. And then he used to... Then he sold it. And retained... Come in.
Please, excuse me.
In any event, that case involved alleged disturbance of the neighbors by some... ducks or geese that he maintained there. He had a country place there back behind the house. And Judge Shaw, who died not long ago, was the judge in that case. He rendered a rather strange decision, I thought. He won partially, lost partially. He said he'd determine how many would constitute a nuisance.
Oh, how many ducks?
He could keep six, or he had 12 or 15 or something like that. Be all right, fine. Retained six.
That's
I
cute.
Think that was the number. Something like that. This one is a rather easy answer. What were the early day law facilities like? Jails, courthouses, other, I think, bad. For instance, at Tulsa now, if you've never been through the courthouse,
yes, I have.
Or the jail, you ought to do it. There's no odor like you find in most courthouses. It's clean. And the jails are, as far as we can tell, I've never been in a jail. Yet,
inside, huh?
I've been up on the floor.
Right.
Interviewed people, but, I mean, in other words, I wouldn't want to put my statement up against some inmates, but generally speaking, I think it's safe to say that they are vastly severe. Cleanliness, cleanliness, safety, and so on, all the way around. That's true about jails, and it's true about courthouses. prisoner life, our sentence. I don't know much about that because, as I've told you, I've never practiced criminal law. I think I may safely say that lawbreakers have a much better break now than in the early days. I am amazed sometimes being in court when some person is being sentenced for some very serious crime. I mean, it could be anything. I don't remember any specifically, but they were serious. And the individual will be there. He has to be represented by counsel at every stage of the trial. And the county attorney then, district attorney now, must be present. And I've already indicated, the defendant must have counsel, either about point about a court if he doesn't have his own. And thereupon, the court, in accepting a plea of guilty, I'm talking about this man is up there pleading guilty to a serious event. The judge, because of the decisions of the court, is making it easier for criminals than it ought to be.
Yes.
Is going exhaustively and painstakingly into the question of whether he knows what he's doing. Have you discussed this with your wife? What does she think about it? Have you been made any promises as to what the sentence is? Or it just goes on. I would say that for the average criminal, under those circumstances, it would take 20 minutes or more for the court to acquaint him with his rights. And they have to do that because of the decisions of the higher court.
Right.
It's not their idea. They prefer to just accept his plea of guilty and let him go, I suppose. Or maybe not quite that bad, but they can't do it. Their life would be reversed. They even go into the question now of, are you satisfied if he has a public defender, let's say, or maybe even not, just generally. Have you been satisfied with the services that your lawyer has rendered? Because on appeal now, it's a ground for reversal. If the defendant turns out, even though he's had a counsel appointed for him, and probably nothing to the charge at all, he makes a big issue of the fact that either the counsel didn't know what he was doing, or he didn't protect his rights and so on. So I would say that I don't know that the sentences were longer or shorter, but as far as their rights are concerned, they had tremendous leeway. You ask about whether I would consider the sentences. Again, I'm not really well qualified on this, but I'll try to take a shot at it anyway. I don't think there's much difference in whether they're tougher or not. Varies with the individual judge and so on. People who are practicing criminal law might have a very different view of that and might be able to produce statistics which would establish that there is a vast difference. But I'm not aware of that, so I'm telling you that there is. I'm just taking it for granted. It's about the same now as it was in the days gone by. Was there a pardon and parole board? There's been a pardon and parole board as long as I can remember. Now, that doesn't mean that it's been more than 21 years, because I heard Charlie Chestnut, who's chairman, or has been chairman, I think he's now on the board, lawyer from Miami, mention over television in connection with some pardon and parole board that he'd been on for 21 years. So I knew what that was. Mm-hmm. But it's been it's been a long time. I prefer, again, my view of the matter isn't very much good because I don't have any business before them.
Okay.
After they had served a certain length of time, and as a consequence, after we got so many, we were giving it up for fourth offenders, as I remember, the last time I remember, before I left, got out of the army. And I would go to the quarter. Short after I got to Shutter Shield, I got them to install a quarter and make the whole thing more dignified than it had ever been before, because it's important.
Right.
And I would go to the quarter, where I would find direction and the authorization of the commanding general to tell these persons, hopefully got to be 50 to 100 or more, that we were giving them clemency and what it meant and how fortunate they should consider themselves to get out after a relatively short time, and almost begging them not to commit any other offenses. Well, I reached the conclusion that they were just like running through your ear without anything, because I just went right directly. Because I would have experiences where I would recognize some of these people. I remember one particularly. Every case in the army has to be investigated, and certain investigating officers did that work. They did it upstairs in a courtroom near a two-story building, army building. And one day, lieutenant, he was first lieutenant, and the last I heard he was out of the army, he was lieutenant colonel. I gave him his first promotion, second lieutenant, first lieutenant, while he was with me. And not with any favor on the rest of the officers. They didn't like him, and they thought he polished the apple. And he did a little bit, really. I liked him. He was a North Carolinian. He had some strange talk. He always referred to the dentist as tooth dentist.
Okay.
He had to go to tooth dentist. Well, in any event, in this particular instance, he came in and said, Major, there's a soldier up with us, for investigation. And he says that he appeared before you, and that you, the details took me a little bit, gave him clemency, and now he wants more clemency. So I said, well, I'm going to come up, take a look at it. So I went up and I spotted him. Well, I knew him right away. Most of the states you get to know them, but this particular case. Well, this chap, I don't know if it was on this time that I arranged for clemency or later, it may have been later. When they went out to pick him up, as they did, and they were able, one way or the other, he got in the toilet. They used to toilet at the end of the car, railroad cars.
Oh.
And they would pull it open with their foot, that is, the one who was out to pick him up. And in this particular case, they decided they left the door closed. For what reason, I don't remember. He hopped out the window.
Oh.
When the car got to the train, the train got going slowly. I don't know how he ever opened the window. Because he never could open the windows.
On trains.
In any event, those were interesting days. I had more and more experience. In that regard, that was where I had most of my criminal experience. And that was not trial work, that was administrative work.
Wow.
I ran the thing, and I referred the cases. I remember another one. That sad part of these things, you never knew how they turned out, what you did.
Wow.
For instance, we had one case where the soldier had been given company punishment, which means it can be given to him by his commanding officer. It's not serious. 30 days is the limit. This fellow, sometimes they just got desperate. They didn't know what to do with it. And they didn't know what to do with this fellow. Their charges came to me to pass about whether or not he should be court-martialed. So I looked it over. Nothing serious. Drunk in public. Improperly informed. Drunk. Things like that. Nothing criminal. And captivated me. I wonder why he repeated it. Never serious enough charged to be court-martialed until right now. He's before me. So I said, send him up. I'll talk to him. I just spent a lot of time in his brain. As you see, maybe most of the weeks have come. So he came up. It was rather nice, average of being a soldier. And so I said, told him I had him there, that I just wanted to know what motivated him. That he had done nothing serious and wrong, but finally, the succession of these offenses, commanding officer, his commanding officer, squadron commander, I'll do the necessary in order to bring the matter to a head to have a court-martial. And that's what they're going to do with it. I said, what is the trouble? And he didn't tell me. But he said, you see this scar on my face? I said, what scar? Well, I guess I don't remember this exactly, but I guess I kind of recognized that. It wasn't marked at all. Well, I said, well, on that, he said, every time I get thinking about that, he said, I get drunk. That's what causes my defense. And I wouldn't be surprised whether that was true. Mm-hmm. But he just attached much more importance to the scar than an average individual. Well, the point of that experience is I said to him, have you ever been before a psychiatrist? I said, I have a certain faith in some areas in psychiatry. In your case, when there's no solution, which I dealt very seriously, and it's a court martial to give it to you, so I can help anyone. Would you like to go to them? I said, we have very good work here in the book. I know I'm well, quite well. I said, yeah, I'd like to know if I can do anything. I called him, captain, whoever he was, told him, he said, I'll send it. I sent it. Well, you're so busy. I never did know what happened.
Oh.
I never followed up, you see, to know whether he cured him or killed him. And another one, this is not the same kind. I remember this guy. All charges had passed through me for approval or disapproval or determination of whether it should be special or general court. So on was the point with the commanding officer. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence of that procedure, a case came. Accused, I had a hard time getting his name because that's what we called him instead of the defendant.
Oh.
Accused. Just a nice soft impeachment to the accused. I think it was revealed, at least I learned it, it was not revealed in the charge sheet, but he was the Jehovah Witness. Well, I had quite a little experience forming in the Army. I was chairman of the largest draft board here in Tulsa, Draft Board 3, where I had many, many experiences too. Interesting ones, many of them. I had a special able to hold witnesses, a number of them. They came to appear before my board, 3, I was chairman, as I said, to claim the right to be deferred because they were ministers. Well, I either knew or looked into it and that we didn't have to have any ordination or anything at all. You just declared in the Jehovah's Witnesses, you declare yourself a minister and you are a minister. And hence, since the law provided the ministers could be deferred, they were entitled. I said, never. While I am on this board, will you ever be deferred on that basis? Because you are not an ordained minister. Mm-hmm. you're an ordained minister. Have no difficulty with that. Well, long way around my story, this fellow was charged with failing to salute or some military offense, I forgot what it was. So I was, I used to tell people, I think the only people who didn't get a fair shake on my board were Jehovah's Witnesses, because I really have very little time, I assure you. I'm not a religion, I don't give a damn what religion it practices, but they've got patriotic standards.
Right.
Patriotism.
Not wanting to fight for their country.
Patriotic. Mm-hmm. Well, so I was ready for him, so I recommended the general court, very serious. Highest form of punishment. Highest court, I used to say. So soon thereafter, I had a call, probably the same day, things moved along rapidly in the army, from the general, very elegant first General Cheney. And so he wanted, he said to me, examine this charge sheet. That I had recommended in general court. And he said that he'll probably be back soon, maybe better make it special. So I forgot what he said. So I said, no, I don't think so. I probably didn't say it that calmly, but nevertheless, that was the import. Come in. Excuse me, I hold that off. Okay, take your time. This is Slaymaker. It's on a mission or something. I'm your victim.
Victim?
Yeah.
It's not really that ominous, is it?
Well, that's supposed to be a joke.
Go ahead.
Can I go on? Well, I thought you were going to stop. In any event, I said to the general that I didn't think one of the reasons I didn't think so was that I had chosen the judges. In other words, they had to be approved, of course, by the commanding officer. But because of it was a legal business, they would be referred to others naturally went to me because I was the chief legal officer. And I named all those good people who would be countermanded. Some of them were on the tough side, some of me, I knew all of them well.
Right.
So I said, no, I don't think so. I'll be through
no, with sure.
I said, I don't think so. I said, no, these judges. He said, they'll probably just restore your duty. And all. I said, I don't think so. They'll get a fair trial. So he went along with it. I was kind of surprised, really. But I said, and that was sort of following his general practice, feeling I was in my legal business and knew more about it, which I did. Naturally, he was a, I don't know what he was a West Pointer. Very, and I have great respect for West Pointers. I don't know, general, at least in the olden days. And so we tried. The court gave him 3 years on that case. I never knew whether he served in or whatnot. I didn't have time. We just went like mad because we were investigating and prosecuting and so forth. Just all of them. Finally, there was so much of that. I wouldn't like to get into the Woodard Park decision. Suffice it to say that there was a very marked litigation there, and I don't remember the details of it except to say that the donor, I believe, the direct donor of the Park of the City sought to get him back, and they failed. Well, that's the thrust of it. But others might have more interesting stories to tell on that, although I don't know. Oh no, where the certain places where attorneys would congregate for coffee was unknown. Listen, that's advice of recent years. coffee, a drinking of coffee, doing it as it's done now. You know, I never heard of that, going out for coffee.
You mean literally drinking coffee or taking a break of any kind?
Well, both. Okay. Both. I guess they put together. I thought of it only in terms of coffee, but they did just as I do now. I don't have any breaks. I want to go out. I may, it might be called a good break, but as far as a set up or arrange a special time, or we never have coffee. No, because that's probably very old-fashioned. Many offices you have supply, not all offices.
They do.
But no, at least as far as I know, all remember, all of this is circumscribed by the fact that I'm out to rely pretty much on my own experience. My own experience may not have been the same as others.
Right.
I'm telling you my experience.
That's what we want.
Well, this I don't remember. It went out not too long after I came to the bar. And they were in the car, the motion doctor, on Saturday morning. And that was quite a congregate, a place to congregate. We'd have our bar meetings, as I recall, incidentally, there too. Maybe we would have our bar meetings after the completion of the motion, the Murray doctor. Mm-hmm. But it was quite a station, and that was about the nearest thing to kind of a gathering place, mm-hmm. you might say. There was no coffee there, that I remember, or any drink of any kind. But one thing we didn't learn about it was that lawyers who like to talk and rarely said anything just reveled in that and resorted to that experience, that incident on Saturday morning get things off their chest.
Oh.
And I remember, I wish I could tell this one, but this is, the language is not only profane, but uncultured, so I'm not going to use it. And that takes a bit of the verb away from the incident. But I remember his name. He hasn't been dead too many years. But he was a great guy, dog. He said nothing. Usually, just got to talk. And there was another lawyer, one of the, I don't know if you ever heard the Cross ones, they were a well-known legal family here. That's the Cross ones. He's in town just recently, called me up. Told me he's coming down to see me, he didn't, I don't know, he's moved away from Kentucky. Great wits. My Hess was the best mimic I ever met in my life.
Oh.
My predecessor in the army, in Shepherd Field was a Jew. He had a very marked Jewish accent. He could talk exactly like me.
What was his name? Hess?
Hess, H-E-S-S, Crossman, C-R-O-S-S-L-A-N-D. And he was a great humorist, and he was an enjoyable one. I liked all the Crossmen. There were three of them, three or four. Three or four. All related. Brothers. So this one Saturday morning, it was strange how I've retained this all these years. And this slow got to speak. And Hess Crossman, all the time he got up, I guess got up simultaneously with the idea of leaving. And he walked by me and said, "Well, I always said," so he got off his crude
questions.
And so, it was true. And as I say, that incident isn't much good, except if you were to use the language, which I'm not about to use. He didn't object, because they were all profane. I have found so many people in my life, I do not use profanity. I find it necessary. That's one reason I don't use it. I've known several people who've been very good friends of mine, very profane. One of them right at the bar right here now is one of my law students. He is about as unlike me as anybody could be. I like him very much, and he is terrific at profane. I'll give you this one. This is a little bit not vulgar, but profane. We were talking not too many years ago about a certain lawyer who had died. He was not well regarded by the bar, at least. So I met this lawyer, good friend of mine, still is. Something came up about this lawyer, and this lawyer began to jump on him, tell about so-and-so he was. I said, well, so-and-so calling you by name. I said, I don't believe in doing that. I said, when God puts his hand on somebody's shoulder, I take my mouth. He said, that doesn't work with me. He said, the son of a bitch lies, the son of a bitch dead. Yeah. Oh dear. Why, now let's see. You asked a question about the first district judge. Isn't it strange? I think I can tell you. I think that his name, I think it was Judge Poe. It's one of two. Judge Martin and Judge Poe. One was mayor and one was district judge. And, well, of course, wasn't the first mayor. How would that be? I don't know if it was to say the first district judge. At least he was the first district judge. And he's the one of two. And the other is one of two. Was the first mayor that I remember.
Excuse me, I'm just sorry to keep going. Oh,
judge,
yes.
Yeah.
I'd like to borrow this.
You certainly. It covers everything. Judge, I think we found that I couldn't open it recently when I was looking out. In any event, the first district judge that I remember was Judge Poe, whose son, Ned Poe, still lives here but is not practicing law.
And you're saying Poe?
Poe, P-O-E. He's the same name, by the way, I never thought of that. There's another lawyer here, still another one than the one I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I all knew the name is rather unusual.
Well, actually, excuse me, let me say this. It's Ned Poe's real name is John H. Poe.
Oh, that's right.
And he was the United States District Attorney after he retired from the active practice of law. Excuse me, United States Court Clerk. District Court Clerk.
Short time, yeah.
United States District Court Clerk.
That's right.
Not District Attorney.
His father was a well-known judge. Whether, as I say, he was how this goes as between mayor and judge, I don't know. But Judge Poe and Judge Martin were two of the very earliest judges or mayors. I think Martin was the mayor. I'm pretty sure he was.
Are you sure you're not a writer?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Are you a it looks to me as though you're acting in a repertorial capacity here.
Do you, I'm sure you remember Sadie Gelfand.
Not very well. No, I
would there be anything you'd want to comment about her? I had interviewed her earlier.
You have?
Uh-huh.
Well, of course I have. Very high respect for her, and I did for her husband also. She is an indefatigable worker. Very serious and very sincere, dignified. I could say nothing but the very highest things about her. You knew Sadie Gelfand, didn't you, Kevin?
Oh yes, did you die?
No, she was asking me if I knew her.
Oh, you asked me, you said, did you know her?
Oh, but I know because you, when you were down there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But John, Ned Poe might be a good idea if you would talk to Ned Poe. He might be able to tell you something.
Ned Poe?
Ned, John H. Ned.
Okay, I've got that.
John H. The nickname is Ned. I saw him just the other day. He doesn't look very good. But those were, and he had that there. Judge Poe was considered, I think, much more able of them. Oh, yeah, there is something very interesting if you could get it. I think they were judge and mayor at the same time, whichever was which, and that they were not friendly. And that that came out.
Martin and Poe.
Yeah. That came out and was a well-known story or incident, but I can't tell you what it was. Hmm. I knew that there was some kind of bad blood there. I can't remember, but you might be able to find out from Ned.
Okay.
By the way, you asked, but I can remember them both very well. And their families, that is, I didn't know Poe's family except Ned. I knew of him, he had another very well-known son. Martin had some well-known sons whom I didn't know. They lived in South Denver, by the way, Martin. Mm-hmm. 1600 blocks from South Denver. And he has been there since I was on. The little Chappaquiddick gets probably 15 or 20 years. Don't you think my idea about Chappaquiddick
is a good one? I think that's very good.
A lot of people don't do this because I use it all the time and I mean it seriously.
So when Chappaquiddick was in 1969?
69, yes, 10 years ago. And I couldn't believe it. I would have said 2 or 3 years ago, or 4 or 5 maybe. So now I reduce everything to Chappaquiddick.
You're really going back.
Yeah.
Several Chappaquiddicks today, though.
Now you ask about FBI office steps in Tulsa. I never knew of an FBI office as such ever being in Tulsa.
Oh, is that true? Well, I don't
know. No, I don't know. Now, maybe. They're so not well known, or not known to me. I think maybe there were... just as I think maybe now some of the people in the federal setup possibly may be affiliated or connected with the FBI, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The only one that I ever knew in the FBI was J. Edgar Hoover. He was FBI.
Right. You know,
I don't even think I can name any one of his successors. He hasn't had too many. He hasn't been dead. Chappaquiddick,
no,
he's been dead.
Probably about.
But he hasn't been dead so terribly long.
No.
But he went out, I think, before he died, didn't he, out of the FBI. And he wasn't...
Well, no, I don't think that he did.
He's been with a lot of criticism. Yes, I always thought he was a good man.
I
don't
think.
But you say who headed, only one I ever knew.
Well, that I meant specifically in Tulsa, those who might be from Tulsa.
FBI cases out that no. No, I know that when did Tulsa get his first federal judge? That was, I believe, and this is pretty close, 1923. And it was Judge, do you have his name, by the way? Judge Franklin E. Kennemer, K-E-N-N-E-M-E-R. That was a long, hard political fight. He was a sort of a compromise candidate. He came from Medill, I believe.
From where?
Medill.
Oh.
I believe, or someplace down south. And he had a very hectic career on the bench because of the fact that he was very tough on the community. So it was a... Then in addition to that, it was during that period of his judgeship that his son was involved in a terrific scandal. Here, a girl was murdered, and so on. And that, I talked to her his daughter just the other day. I knew them all very well.
But you think he was a good judge, did you say? Or did you say?
I didn't say, but I will say, I think so. I mean, yeah, I always say, I like him.
And you say tough on the bootlegger, so I had wondered in my mind if some people say,